and welcome to another one of our Canny Conversations podcast, powered by the Pathway Group. My name's Mark Wakeley, and I'm one of the team who bring you these podcasts each week. In this series, Safraz Ali will be talking to some of the business people he's met and worked with in his 23 years at the heart of the West Midlands business community. And of course, many of the businesses that are part of the Multicultural Apprenticeship Alliance. In this brand new episode of Canny Conversations, Safraz will be talking to Charlotte Bosworth, the Managing Director of Innovate Awards, an awarding organisation making waves in the industry. Listen as Charlotte takes us through her journey from a challenging upbringing to her impactful career choices. Discover the secrets behind Innovate Awards' success, Charlotte's dedication to serving clients, and the innovative approach to technology that sets them apart. So, let's dive into their conversation.
Welcome to Canny Conversations. We're at Series 5 and we're having conversations about career and talent. Today, I've got one of my role models, an individual that often I see on stage, somebody who is bubbly, the personality of many, many awarding events, events per se, conferences and so forth, and often the centerpiece of most of these conferences and award shows as well. This individual is a very local person. I'll start giving some clues. It's an individual that runs an awarding organization and has been running an awarding organization for a number of years and is actually making a fair amount of progress, fair amount of innovation, and that's a clue there. It is our very own Charlotte. I feel like we're good friends because we see each other on a very regular basis. And sometimes I've seen you in a sari, sometimes I've seen you in different gear. But today you're here face to face. And thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you coming here.
And thank you for inviting me. And hopefully my bubbly personality can come across as we go through your questions.
Thank you, Charlotte. Really appreciate that. So we're talking to Charlotte Bosworth. Charlotte Bosworth is the Managing Director of Innovate Awards, or Innovating Awarding. It's an awarding organization. It's an endpoint assessment organization. Charlotte, how's it going?
So it depends which day of the week you ask. Today's a Friday, so it feels it is going okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's been a really, really interesting journey, as I'm sure you've seen. There's been ups and downs. Yeah. We're going into a situation where we're going to have potentially change of government, which is causing us to kind of rethink, have to think about our business as we move forward. But to now be the third largest endpoint assessment organisation and have the amount of growth we've had, to get to work with so many amazing employers and providers on a day-to-day basis. We're in a good place.
So it's going quite well then. It's going quite well, yeah. So some of the stuff that I've looked at, I mean, I've looked at the accounts, I've looked at your reports on your website. By the way, it's a fantastic website. A lot of great branding around that site as well, a lot of useful information. There's definitely, you've listened to the customers, you've listened to the audience out there, and you've delivered. It shows in the figures, it shows in the growth in the organization. The turnover is going through the roof. The recruitment in terms of staffing as well, you know, you've got a strong team as well, and the numbers are clearly there. What would you say is, if there's a couple of things in terms of the secret, in terms of some of the success that you've had, particularly in a market which is very, very competitive? It's a market that there's a lot of moving parts as well, and quite difficult to make things work from a financial perspective, let alone, you know, from servicing the customer, as well as all the macro governmental sort of changes out there. So tell us, share some secrets.
Okay, but like any good chef, I will keep a little bit people don't know all of my ingredients. Yeah. But the main things I would say is absolutely knowing your customer base and who you're trying to serve. And very early on when I started at Innovate, I was talking to a training provider. And as you'll be aware, we're part of a wider group, Lifetime Training Group. And this particular provider said to me, Charlotte, we really like your personality. We like you. We like what you stand for, but we'll never work and operate with you because you are part of a wider group who is one of our competitors. And that made me rethink about who my customer was. So from that moment on, instead of trying to just appease a provider, it's the employer and the apprentice that we focused, who we targeted, and recognized that that sometimes changed our conversation. So we very early on realized that the quality of the provision was the focus for the employer, and they were less financially
swayed.
Whereas because of the funding bans, which are really challenging in some areas, sometimes the provider wants to retain as much as they can to ensure good quality teaching and learning, where employers weren't as price sensitive. We recognise the type of information, that apprentice feedback, the type of data and reporting to see how the provision was working, so they could then sell that and convince their own exec teams how well apprenticeships were being delivered within their businesses, made a big difference to our proposition. So it's been very much actually really recognising that the employer is the purchaser to actually retain, recruit and upskill their own workforce. And that's allowed us to really position. And I think that's one of the main areas, and our no surprises approach. Nobody should go into any exam without knowing what is going to be put in front of them, so that, that preparation materials, webinars, having people on hand to be able to talk them through. And we also provide a bio of all our examiners to every apprentice before they go in the process. So they're really, really clear that that person is qualified, can actually make sure that they're supported, and then we really focus on that preparation side as well.
I've got a quotation here which says, our clients are our partners for life. They work with us not only because of the quality of our in-point assessment and qualifications, but because of our people.
Yes.
So talk to me about some of the team that you have, the staff that you have. You talked about the bios and so forth. How have you been able to recruit?
So on that partnership piece, one thing I'm still continually proud of, we haven't yet lost one client. So every client has become a true partner and has been really, really loyal to us as well. So I thank them for that, because it's allowed the business to be the success it is. But truly, Innovate is about the people, and every single individual, they don't even know it when they come in. I've got somebody who's recently joined us. He joined us, in fact, 2 years ago, and he keeps saying to me, I've never stayed in a business longer than 6 months. Okay. So the fact that he's with it, has been with us 2 years, and he just wants to continue and develop and grow with us as well. And we do treat it as a family.
Okay.
You know, we are there for each other. We make sure the environment is built to allow people to have the time for each other, time for each ourselves. We make sure there's plenty of social interaction, time to come together. So it's an organization where it sounds like a bit of an old cliche, where we work hard, we care about what we do, but we also play hard as well. Okay. And that seems to have been the ingredients that works for us as an organization.
I was reading a little bit about the fact that you've developed your own sort of system as well, so technology. How important is digital technology and investments that you make?
In what we do in Innovate, it's massively important. So sounds a bit, we promote remote.
Okay.
You know, now I don't think there's as much need to be traveling for people to spend massive amount of time on the road. We've actually got the ability to use technology in a different way. And I think that's becoming more and more prevalent as we move forward. And it's actually caused us to be a bit of a disruptor in the market, the fact that technology and delivering assessments by technology is our go-to. So when I started at Innovate, we didn't have a back office technology system. So that's where we worked with another organization to develop one. And we started with actually, how does this look like to the external user, the provider, the apprentice, the employer? And then had our staff behind the scenes for about 2 years, peddling very, very quickly. But to the outside world, it will look fabulous and great. And the organization that developed the system for us then went on to acquire a new business. So they had new investment areas to focus on. So I went to the company and said, okay, what happens now? And they said, you've got a minimal viable product. So that caused us to acquire it. And then from that, we've continued to develop it and actually commercialize it. So we now sell that into lots of other endpoint assessment organizations, including the biggest in the market. So that technology platform now services 60% of endpoint assessment organizations within the industry. So another great success.
Okay, fantastic. So just to give us an idea of the makeup of your team, your staff, I mean, you know, how many are sort of assessors, how many are sort of digital, and just give us an idea of the makeup of the team, really.
Yeah, so as you would expect, we do have a high assessment workforce. Mm. So permanent workforce is 132 people.
Okay.
We also have associate assessors, which we use for peak periods of time. So we utilize them when we need to, but we also have our own assessors that we employ permanently that allows us to invest in their training development and make them properly feel like they're part of the Innovate team as well. Yeah. So in the assessor workforce, there's 80, and then the other 50 are developers, client relationship, our central booking team, as we have a team that are office-based and develop. We've also got the qualification side of the business that is supported as well. So you've got about 70% of the workforce that are assessors. The rest is that back office.
And in terms of the split between awarding and EPA stuff, I mean, where's the split if you don't mind?
So it depends which way you look at the split.
Okay.
Whether you look at it from a revenue perspective or otherwise. If we're thinking about workforce, we only have a really small team for qualifications because a lot of that still has things such as internal assessment.
Yeah.
So we don't have to do as much work in that space. So is a lower amount of our workforce is applied to that. From a revenue split.
But it's a higher revenue split possible.
Yeah. So actual revenue, we now get a higher percentage from endpoint assessment, but margins are much higher in qualifications. So it all kind of evens out over time, really.
And in terms of the depth and breadth of sort of qualifications, just give us an idea of the range of qualifications that you sort of look after and deliver.
Yeah, so we start from level one up to level seven. So that's the kind of breadth. But back to that point around, we've become employer driven. So the employers we work with determine which qualifications. So it tends to start quite often where they'll want us to work with them on employability programs or where they're upskilling their workforce. So they could be the more generic areas such as leadership management, customer service, business admin, team leading, through to the more occupational areas. So we cover hospitality, we cover retail, healthcare, adult care, passenger transport and logistics is a recent one we've got into, along with the creative industries, where that has come purely out of our relationship with the BBC, who we've had a long-standing relationship with, who said, we don't believe people are serving the creative sector from an examination board perspective in the way they should. Is this an area where you will look to get into? So we'll then go and see if we can find the talent, the workforce, and recruit the right people to be able to do a good job. If we can, then we'll certainly look at seeing if that's viable to get into that sector.
So truly employer-led and customer-led in terms of listening
and
bespoking wherever possible. Okay. So you mentioned an employer name there, but any other sort of employers where you feel that, you know, these are significant partnerships and achievements and you're proud to have them as your customers?
I'm proud of every employer we work with, and, you know, they're big to small and have lots of different demands, as you can imagine, and different depths of relationships. So I'm going to pick a few out. Yeah. Please, any employers that we work with that I don't mention, do not be offended. But I'm trying to get a representative viewpoint here. So just because we are in Birmingham, I should mention M&B because they would tell me off I didn't with their head office being based here. Yeah. And, you know, that they've been a longstanding partner with us and really push apprenticeships, you know, clearly massively invest in apprenticeships.
They're award winning as well in terms of the national awards and so forth.
Exactly. And they have a whole organization approach that are behind them when it comes to apprentices. So we've worked with those for many years. BT is another organization. I'm trying to think of people that might be close to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, the relationship with BT is we tendered for the work 6 years ago. Now, actually, every provider they work with, they are told that they'll only work with them if we are the endpoint assessment or the awarding organisation.
Okay.
So that's been massively powerful.
Big endorsement, that is.
Screwfix is another one, which is actually an employer provider, and there isn't many employer providers still left. And again, they do so much to now celebrate their apprenticeships. I could go on. Many NHS trusts that we work with as well. And in total, we have, I think it's 1,600 employers that we work with now across our multiple providers. Okay. And the relationship is built from the level of depth they want with us, and we just let them choose it. Some don't want to have an involvement. They're happy working through their provider. But then over time, what we've found is those organisations and also the provider see the balance of having it as a tripartite, having the awarding organisation, the provider and the employer. And I think you'll know from your own experiences where you have that collaborative approach and everyone's coming together to get to the best outcome, particularly for that apprentice, that learner and that business we're working with, that's where it works best.
Okay. And in terms of working with independent training providers and sort of colleges and so forth, how does that look like?
So we work with 219 providers in total. About 80% of those are providers, the other 20% being colleges.
Colleges. Some big numbers there.
Yeah.
So just to recap, so you're the third largest endpoint assessment organization currently.
That's right.
Currently.
Yes, yeah, currently.
Currently, yeah. So that's a mean feat, that is, in terms of numbers and also the success as well. So obviously with the position that you have, it has a certain level of responsibility as well, because now you're responsible for the sector as well.
Yes.
In terms of what it is. It's not just an organization, you know, you have a voice within the sector, a voice within the bigger macro perspective, which again, you know, there's an element of a duty as well. You know, you can't just be insular, you've got to look outwards and you've got to look at, be part of those conversations. So talk to us a little bit about that level of responsibility that you automatically would have being the managing director of the third largest endpoint assessment.
So I suppose there's a couple of areas to this. So as you've said, there's lots of times you'll see me chairing, paneling, speaking at multiple conferences, which becomes part of that responsibility to know how things are going in your organisation, what you're picking up, how things are moving forward. But actually, I think it's the subtle stuff that happens behind the scenes, which is the responsibility which we've seen have the biggest impact. So we have a lot of new endpoint assessment organisations, some very specialised, who don't know what they don't know. Mm. I've worked in assessment for a long time now, many, many years. And there's things you learn during that time. We actually have, I think there's now over 200 endpoint assessment organisations, and we've had about 40 of them come to our offices where they've sat with our teams for a day. We show them how we do things. We introduce them to things they need to consider, particularly when it comes to quality strategies, what their compliance team may need to look like, how we support them to show that there's a particular organisation that's quite fast growing at the moment. And their concern is how will they continue to do what they're doing at scale? Mm. So we've really worked, because of our fast growth and the experience that we've had, to demonstrate and work on that. And some people could say, why do you do that? These people are your competitors. But actually, we also have a responsibility to make sure the sector works and apprenticeships as a whole entity doesn't fail, particularly the endpoint assessment. We all want it to succeed. We all want it to remain, although it may go through a different guise if you read some of the press and what's going on there. But that responsibility is actually really getting your hands dirty still and helping those organisations grow as well. Competition is always healthy.
Charlotte, you spoke earlier on about, you know, the fact that you had the opportunity to acquire an organisation because it just fitted in and the opportunity was there.
And I didn't want it getting in the competitor's hands. Let's not deny that
as well.
That was a driver too.
Are you seeking sort of acquisitions, or is that something, you know, you said there's organisations coming in. It's quite hard to make ends meet, particularly in the early days, and a lot of people underestimate or overestimate the length of time and what the resources required, and it's quite a capital intensive setup. You know, it's just setting up is, there's a cost, but maintaining and then servicing and then.
I think there's a couple of approaches here, which has allowed us to grow, is always looking to see if there are organisations looking to be acquired. What was particularly interesting as we went through endpoint assessment organisations where they were required to become regulated is a lot of organisations wanted to sell at that point because the cost of regulation and becoming regulated wasn't a world they wanted to go into. But it came after they'd submitted a couple of applications. So then they didn't have value because yeah. we were acquiring something that the regulator didn't necessarily think was up to scratch. So we yeah. would have had to have started again. So they didn't necessarily become organisations that we'd want to acquire because what were we yeah. really acquiring? And then the second piece to it is actually what we have found has been an approach that works for us. And this does sound quite harsh, but it's not my fault if they're not doing a good job. But if there are people in our sector and aren't doing a good job and they're not serving their customers, then actually we found it best to actually enter into that market ourselves because they're not satisfying their customers anyway.
So that makes sense. So for example, where you think, you know, there's a niche and the endpoint assessment organization isn't doing a great job.
Yeah.
Rather than looking at maybe as acquisition, you can
why would we acquire yeah, something that's substandard? Why we can build can do that better. Ourselves.
You could do better with your exactly. with your infrastructure, with your name, brand name and, exactly and so that. Forth. You might as well enter the marketplace because exactly it requires
that. But always scouting around looking for business.
So
if
somebody
to
came knocking on your on yes. your on your door as such and said, yeah. you know, this potentially
and it was a new sector, they were doing an amazing add job value. We knew we could get into that, of course, but yeah. so far it's ended up actually being where somebody where? Isn't doing a great job, so we've been able to take their okay. client base.
Okay,
what sorry about, if that makes no, me sound no, a bit harsh.
No, I think it's as you said, it's about the customer at the end of the day. Yes, it's about, you know, exactly. the market and so forth, and we all have a sense
that
of duty.
Apprentice and learner deserves to have a good yeah, experience.
Yeah, and so on. And business is about ultimately servicing the customer and, exactly and so that. Forth. So yeah, it absolutely makes sense. So Charlotte, you talk about responsibility to the sector, and you talk about and again, you know, I've seen you. You know, you're very open, and you show up, you turn up to all the main sort of events.
My husband often says I'd turn up to the opening of a packet of crisps.
you show up, you turn up, and you know you're very well known for that, and you're sort of supporting, and you know you've supported us, but you're supporting everybody in the sector, wider sector, in terms of doing the work. And there's not many people who do that and can sustain that, and you've been able to do that over a period of time. So hats off to you, respect to you for that. You know, we were talking earlier on, and you've been branded now as the Endpoint Assessment Queen, which I think is a fantastic accolade. And
I just have to make sure my crown yeah. doesn't slip, though,
And you've got your own hashtag as well. Often when you're at events, the Ask Charlotte hashtag that comes up as well, which I think is fantastic. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, your own sort of goals and aspirations and the desire to sort of make that difference. And, you know, what makes you tick? You know, what's there, Charlotte?
I'm a busybody. Yeah. I think, you know, if I'm committing to doing something and being involved in something, I'm always going to try and do that with all the energy and to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I get involved in so much. If there's suddenly a hook and something that I think is needing support, we need to get behind, can ensure things are better, then I don't know. I just grab it and I just end up getting involved. And I, you know, if I take things such as Walsall College, you know, I got involved with the college many, many years ago and then ended up having a conversation with somebody saying, oh, you know, we think actually you could help with some of the things here. And I was like, well, you will say that, wouldn't you? But then I got involved with this, I chair the student group. And we only had a really, really small representation of students come along. We changed it up. First thing I did is make sure chips were available. That yeah. made a big difference. Yeah. And now, actually, we have proper conversations. That group has become a much wider group. People feel they're genuinely listened to. That is a reason I'll be involved with the college forever. Because, you know, when you feel you have that impact, and I'm sure you felt it yourself, is you just can't let it go. And you just want to get more and more involved. And I think that's the thing that makes me tick, is the minute you can see you've had an impact, or even that if that's on one individual, it kind of gives you the drive to keep getting involved and keep being busy and a busybody.
And you say that, I think you care actually, Charlotte, and you make a difference. I mean, you know, I've said this before, and I thank you for it. I mean, there's an opportunity where our organization wanted to run a panel at the apprenticeship conference, we unfortunately, you know, it's fully booked, and I think one of my colleagues just came to you just to complain, really, to see if there's anything we do, and you sort of gave up your space. So, you know, you cared. I mean, it wasn't about yourself. It was about, you know, allowing other people the opportunity. And a lot of the time when you show up, it's because you care, you want to make a difference, and you want to make a meaningful difference is what I was saying.
And,
yeah.
You know, I actually think at that particular conference, there was more you had to say than I had to say. And,
that's just
you know, this is where we should be supporting each other. You know, sometimes we know particular time is particular messages should be heard at particular times, and
that's just one example where you've sort of, you know, you said, okay, you know what, you know, I want to sort of stand aside and give you the opportunity because I feel like you guys can get your word out there and so forth.
And so, I hear it was very successful. Yeah. So,
I appreciate great, that, and hats off to you. And that's not the only time. There's many occasions where you've given us the stay clear and the sort of guidance. And it's not just us, it's the sector as a whole. You're a connector, you know, you connect people, you connect organizations, and you see opportunities, and you know, you guide people, so people do come to you for advice and so forth. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, my latest thing I've ended up getting kind of talked into is there's a training provider that's based in my home city, and they wanted to set up an accessibility board, which was, it's very much around, as you would expect, although we think we see the world in certain ways, actually, how do we see it through the world of the people we're trying to serve? Okay. And I've now ended up involved in that board.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure how or why. I just raised my head above the parapet and I got involved in that too.
alongside many, many other things. I've got a quote here, and this is an article that was in the FE Week, and he says, Charlotte has a history of turning up when no one tells her to, and it's got her a long way. I thought, you know, if you see that in the right way, you know, yes, you say you're a busybody, but I think it's about knocking on the doors that you need to knock on and talking
massively
to the people.
And we sometimes think, don't we, when we look around the people that we interact with through our day-to-day jobs, but everyone's just hopefully trying to be a good person. And none of us can do that single-handedly. We all need a helping hand, somebody by our side, somebody to support us. And most of the time I've found the people who seem the most scary are the ones who need the most help. And by actually reaching out to them, you know, if I'm going to take a minister, I'm not going to name a minister, but actually none of them can do their job without the people like us on the ground. Mm. So actually going up to them and telling them how we can help them, I think they always, I've found, open arms.
We'll come to that. We'll talk about government and ministers, and you touched on potentially that maybe a change. But what I would like to do is, with your permission, is go back a little bit in time. And you touched on your hometown. I want to talk a little bit about upbringing, and I want to talk about some of those challenges and some of the things that you've experienced. That, you know, I mean, I definitely can relate to, and I hold my hands up high, because when I read this and I thought, you know, I probably pigeonholed you in a slightly different level, and this is an eye-opener. You know, you talk about unconscious bias. I fell into that trap myself, and I hold my hands up. And I want to ask you if you're comfortable talking a little bit about the early sort of childhood and some of that without me prodding too much. You know, tell me those experiences, please, Charlotte. And share with the audience.
Okay. Gosh, it's how much of a therapy session you want this to be. So I'll try and keep it of an area that is useful. So my parents split up very, very young. My mum did go on to remarry, but it was not necessarily the most stable upbringing. And my mum was always very, very hardworking, but didn't necessarily appreciate the value of education. Yeah. So that kind of whole push to make sure your homework was all done, what school I attended wasn't necessarily a focus at all. So that all became fairly self-taught. And we lived in a very deprived area of Coventry. I was born in an area called Woodend, for those who know Woodend, and then moved to Canley, which is where my parents, my stepdad and my mum, still live. And I was going to school and I just wasn't feeling engaged. I wasn't feeling challenged, and I didn't feel that anybody really cared about my education. So at the age of 10, I thought I need to take this into my own hands. And at the Church of England school I went to, there was a couple of girls that you're just talking to as you're playing rounders or whatever it may be. And they were going to this school called Blue Coats. And I was like, whoa, this school sounds so amazing. Very, very naively, I found out all the details about this school and then went to the two interviews on my own and got into the school. What I didn't realise until I fast forward 20 odd years and the head at the time, Mr. Lewin, I still don't know what his first name is. Yeah. I still refer to him as Mr. Lewin. Yeah. He actually told me I was the only person ever that had gone to those interviews without their parents with them. And you know, there's something in that, isn't there, where if you don't know what you don't know, you have the confidence to take on the world and tackle the world. And the school was massively life-changing for me in multiple ways. The whole educational experience, the teachers I interacted with from the majority of my time just pushed me, challenged me. I think they could kind of see I was a little bit different. And by that, as in I was literally learning with them. And that was not just necessarily educationally, but also culturally. So when I went to Blue Coats, and this is the Blue Coats in Coventry, rather than the one nearby, is it was also one of the first years black children were allowed into the school.
Okay.
So they actually widened out to not just be Church of England, but also Evangelical Methodist as well. So I suddenly met different cultures, different people, different backgrounds, ate different food, and also had this amazing educational experience. And without that, I certainly would not be the person I am. It was a life changer for me. And whether that's why I'm so interested in education and know the difference and impact can have, I do not know, but it certainly was something that shaped me.
Thank you for sharing that, Charlotte. I mean, again, it's no mean feat. I mean, you're talking about two bus rides. You're talking about, you know, sort of young age, doing this all yourself. Again, not having the push from parents who normally are often sort of, you know, encouraging their children and sort of doing all of this as a self-starter and with your own sort of motivation. It's not an easy thing, and not having, again, the sort of sibling rivalry or push as well. And, you know, so it's, you know, very unique in that respect. And then obviously going into that environment and you know, which is a fairly competitive environment in terms of the schooling and challenging environment, and has led on for a lifelong learning journey of self-development and so forth. And then, you know, if you're comfortable, you know, we can talk a little bit about your sort of work experiences and how you maintained, again, you know, just sharing with the audience, because, you know, we're talking about sort of career and talent story. So, so we're interested in the story behind, you know, the face that we see and the public speeches and all the rest of it, and a little bit about the journey and the experiences so people can relate to that, hopefully.
Yeah, so after I finished school, I managed to get it with, I don't know whether people actually know this reference, and I'd call it old money apprenticeships, but youth training schemes, people know what those are. So I was the first year of doing GCSEs, which is fascinating. I'm still fascinated that GCSEs are still around.
Yeah.
They haven't changed since 1988. But I went on to what was a youth training scheme, and just purely by luck, I was placed within a solicitor's office. And I started the role there as what would be deemed as an office junior. And very, very quickly, the senior partner, Michael Taberner, who still remains a dear friend, he said, "We don't think you're that good at this admin stuff. we think actually you would be better. All you're doing is quizzing, questioning, asking why that's done in that way. It's like you're even questioning the justice system and everything. So maybe you would be better to be training as a legal executive."
Okay.
So that was where suddenly somebody started investing in me, took an interest, and that was an amazing experience. I then went to Crown Court to take the papers to the barrister, and we were defending somebody who they clearly had done some very serious things wrong, and we were defending him, and he walked away from the court. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I thought, I'm not ever going to be a solicitor because I don't like injustice. So that caused then for me to take my experience and go and work in a plant hire company. And whilst I was there in the legal team, started traveling, got involved in business development, and then got pregnant.
Yeah.
So it was this moment where it's like, okay,
yeah,
where does life go now?
Maybe plan B or C.
And this is where I ended up on the door of what then was known as RSA Examination Board. And not dissimilar to my previous experience, I went in there in an admin role and very quickly they said I wasn't very good at admin. So I think if there is anybody out there who's expected to me to carry out any admin tasks, I'm really, it's not my strength. And there's much better people that are more brilliant at that than I am. So I was offered the opportunity to become a manager within 3 months of working there. And then my career just very, very quickly grew. And I took every opportunity and every opportunity to learn myself. OCR, Oxford Cambridge RSA, is an organization to me where if you're willing to want to learn and develop, they will offer you there. And to anybody out there, if you're working in an organization that's willing to invest in your development, take every opportunity. It's extra work. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it's going to push you. Sometimes you're going to wonder why the hell you're doing that rather than being sat in a pub garden on a Saturday. But believe me, the effort becomes worth it. And if you've got an employer that's willing to invest in you, take every opportunity. And it allowed my career to continue to grow. And I ended up going into OCR, RSA as it was then, as an administrator on a twilight shift to being the director of vocational education.
Fantastic. So,
that's the point where we have to leave Charlotte and Safraz until next week, when you'll be able to hear the second half of their conversation. So if you don't want to miss that, then remember to subscribe or follow us. If you're new to the podcast, let me tell you, there are already 88 other Canny Conversations podcast episodes out there. And you can listen to all those past episodes by searching for Canny Conversations on your preferred podcast platform, or go to 1386audio.com/ have a listen. We'd also love it if you could review, subscribe, or follow the podcast. And please tell your friends and colleagues about us. If you'd like to know more, then go to cannyconversationspodcast.co.uk or go to Safraz's website, which is safraz.co.uk. Safraz has also written a series of easy-to-follow business books, Canny Bites, and these are available from cannybites.co.uk/buy-the-book. As I said, we'll be back next week, where you'll be able to hear the second half of Safraz's conversation with Charlotte Bosworth, the Managing Director of Innovate Awards. So until then, we hope you have a good week.
This is a 1386 audio production.